Hello, everybody, and welcome to Module 2 in the Creative Freedom Apprenticeship. This is Lisa Robin Young, and today we're wrapping up our discussion on onlyness as part of confidence. And then we'll begin discussing heart-centered marketing by talking about the artisan trap. We'll wrap up with a review of the originality versus difficulty axis homework that you were given last week, and a discussion about donuts. Yes, you heard me correctly, donuts. So grab your cup of joe, your notebook, your pen, and we're going to get started. Last week we talked about getting clarity around your non-negotiables and transition plan to bring more of your great work to the world. Whether you're in a day job or you're just feeling like the bottleneck in an otherwise successful business, these are points of clarity that you've got to have or you're going to keep spinning your wheels. Does anybody have any ahas they want to share today from the work that they did over the last week? Star 6 will put you in the queue if there's anything that you want to share. We're going to look at another big problem for creatives that want to make a good living doing what they love today, and that's confidence, specifically the confidence that it takes to share your great work with the world. We're going to be talking about marketing, but it's also more than that. It's being willing to step out of the vicious circle that keeps you from making progress and seeing sustainable growth in your business. I'm not showing anybody in the queue, so if you guys don't have any ahas that you want to share, we're going to dive right into this week's conversation. One of the greatest artists and dance innovators of the 20th century, Martha Graham, said, "There is a vitality, a life force, an energy, a quickening that is translated through you into action. And because there is only one of you in all of time, this expression is unique. And if you block it, it will never exist through any other medium, and it will be lost. The world will not have it. It's not your business to determine how good it is, nor how valuable, nor how it compares with other expressions. It is your business to keep it yours, clearly and directly, to keep the channel open." And then my favorite part, she says, "You do not even have to believe in yourself or your work. You have to keep yourself open and aware to the urges that motivate you." And this is a great reminder that while courage fuels clarity, which fuels confidence, in truth, confidence is an illusion formed around our beliefs. What did I just say? Wait. Didn't I say in our last lesson that we can flex our confidence muscles by taking courageous action in a safe space? Yes, I did, and yes, we can. And a deeper truth is that safety is an illusion. One person's safe is another person's sheer terror. When my husband first moved to my hometown, he'd grown up in a quiet, ruralish community. Okay? My hometown is Flint, Michigan, one of the most dangerous cities in America at the time. I was accustomed to the various noises of city life, and life in Flint to me was safe, and I knew where the unsafe places were, so I didn't go there, all right? But not so to my husband. One night, we were asleep, and he woke bolt upright to the sound of pat, 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 pat. "What was that?" he said. I mean, it was sheer terror shaking me to wake me up. And I caught the last couple of gunshots, and I was like, "Those are just gunshots. They're at least a few blocks away. It's fine. Go back to sleep." And I rolled over. And I'm sure you can guess that he could not go back to sleep. His anxiety was on high alert. He didn't feel safe. I, on the other hand, was sleeping like a baby within minutes. Over time, he got used to those sounds. But he still never felt truly safe, and we ended up moving to the town we're in now. Quiet, rural America. His sense of safety and stability has been restored. And then last fall, we heard a couple of gunshots, and so now we've started the house search again. So having a sense of safety is paramount for making progress, because if you don't feel safe, you won't take courageous action. And yet, you need to understand that the sense of safety you seek is in the control of your mind. You can choose right now in this moment to feel safe in your current circumstances and stay on this class and listen all the way to the end, or you can feel afraid and you can choose to block what's coming through your channel, as Martha Graham describes. And if you block what's coming through you, we're all missing out. In our last lesson, we talked a bit about loneliness, and I want to wrap that discussion this week by giving you permission to own your personal brand of weirdness. And by weird, lest you take offense, I mean the archaic Scottish definition of weird, a person's destiny. You know, the Weird Sisters are traditionally considered to be the prophets of Shakespeare's story, bringing news of one's destiny. Well, you have a destiny that revolves tightly around your onlyness, that thing that makes you uniquely you. And since Merchant, Nyla for Merchant, developed this concept and really brought it out, you're going to hear me talking a lot about her today. She says, onlyness is your history, experiences, visions, and hopes. We talked about that last time. When you claim it and stand in that spot only you stand in, you can actually feel alone. And it's this loneliness that I want to hit on here, because you've probably heard the phrase, it's lonely at the top. Well, it's only lonely if you try to do and be everything yourself. And we'll talk more about team building and delegation later in the course, but that list that you created of what needs to change isn't going to change by itself. It takes courage to ask for help. It takes courage to let things go and bring other people into your sphere on your ascent. And yet, while I want you to be thinking about who can help me and who can I reach out to, you can't just bring anybody into your circle, because it's going to affect your energy. And this is where you need to value yourself more. I was working with a startup company for nearly a year, and I was charged with getting their direct sales division up off the ground. It was a great opportunity for me and a chance to help a lot of people with my expertise if we could get the ball rolling. So I dove into this opportunity not really looking at what I was giving up by bringing those people into my sphere. First, I gave up a lot of my time. It was essentially a full-time job for me, plus the owner was trying to reach me all hours of the day and night, 9 in the morning, 8 at night. I eventually set some boundaries with him, but that was really just the tip of the iceberg of me not really valuing myself. There were disrespectful, dare I say, harassing phone calls and commentary about my appearance. And this was a remote assignment, so thank God I wasn't in the office every day. It was only after I resigned the position that I realized how much additional energy it was robbing from me to work in that environment and to have those people in my sphere. Sure, the money was good, and yes, the people I could help was significant if we could get the ball rolling, but the amount of me that I had to invest into this project was not generating a positive return on my total investment. I wasn't valuing myself nearly enough. So I say this because I don't want you to just start handing off things to just anybody. You need to be judicious and prudent about who you're getting help from. And in our last lesson, we talked about how much your time is worth when we did that threshold of belief exercise. Today, I want to plant the seed about how much you are worth. You're priceless. Okay, which means it's even more important that you're focusing on doing what really matters to you in life and your great work in the world, and making sure that the right people are getting on the bus. I think it was Jim Collins who said, you got to get the right people on the bus in his book, Good to Great. So as we're mulling over the what needs to change list, be prudent, be judicious. Don't just let everything go. But also, don't cling to, oh, I got to do all this stuff myself, because that's not reality. That's what creates the loneliness. Merchant says that it's imperative for us to find the U-shaped hole in the world, Y-O-U-shaped the hole that's shaped like you, and fill it with you, not the masked you, but the real you, because that's what we need. And as Martha Graham reminded us at the beginning of this lesson, you don't even need to believe in yourself or the work that you're doing. You just need to show up and do it. Merchant then adds this piece to the conversation. She says, everyone thinks of change as changing the world as a good thing. But in the process, you're likely changing yourself. And as you change, it can be uncomfortable for those that know you as you are. You will lose some friends. Some of that is because you lack the skills to know what to say, using new skills as you're trying on your new ideas. Some of it is that people are freaked out by your changing, and so they're more sensitive. And so you have some altercation or miscommunication, which makes it seem that the rift is about this particular conversation, but it's really often just about the change itself. Deep stuff, right? I'd hazard a guess, though, that you're already feeling this, already recognizing this, maybe even seeing it as a pattern and resisting this growth. It's this energy of resistance, that creates that sense of loneliness. Because instead of stepping into your U-shaped hole in the world, where only you can fit comfortably, we often cling to the illusion of safety, that our minds have created around what we already thought we knew about ourselves and our world. So one of this week's assignments will be to start processing some of those beliefs you're clinging to. What's holding you where you're at? What's the sense of truth that you're resisting? Because it might seem very counterintuitive to where you're at. And you have to be willing to do this without judgment. Dun, dun, dun. Ruthless honesty requires you to drop the judgment. On one of my coaching calls last week, we talked about wanting to want something and wanting to not want something. And that's very tricky territory. That's living in the shoulds. And I'll post a link to a blog post I wrote about this in the download area so that you can take this deeper. But essentially, when you're working in the shoulds, when you're living in the shoulds, you're stuck. You're paralyzed. You're not moving forward. You're not making a decision. You're saying, I should want this. Everyone says I should want this. I want to want this. And you're wasting energy there instead of saying, well, I may want to want it, but it doesn't seem as if I really do, regardless of what I, quote unquote, should be feeling. This is what I really feel. Or saying, I shouldn't want this. Every bone in my body says I shouldn't want this, but I do. I really do want this. And then making the decision to take courageous action around that truth. And to be clear, courageous action isn't always about taking big steps and huge leaps and scary jumps. It can be as simple as picking something out of the trash that you'd previously thrown away. That's what happened when Alexander Fleming pulled the Petri dish out of the trash. All the protocols of science said, you throw out contaminated Petri dishes. But Fleming decided to pull it out of the trash and study it. That's all. No major I'm going to change the world concepts. Just, let me dig that out of the trash. Let me take a closer look. He didn't know where it would lead. He just had an inkling, a curiosity to study it and see what would happen next. There was no pressure there. Fleming later said, when I woke up just after dawn on September 28, 1928, I certainly didn't plan to revolutionize all medicine by discovering the world's first antibiotic. But that's what he did. Little steps, little inklings. Let me take something out of the trash. That thing I thought I wasn't going to do or that I thought I shouldn't do, let me go back and look at that one more time. I want to encourage you to think in terms of small, maybe even microcosmically small, teeny tiny, itty bitty baby steps. Take the pressure off yourself. Little inkling. As Graham said, keeping the channel open, since you don't know where inspiration will come from or when it will strike. But it will be a lot harder to find if you're judging everything that comes through and to you. Oh, well, not that. Well, I shouldn't want that. oh, no, that's not for me. Oh, no, that's bad. That's not good. Drop the judgment. A big piece of developing confidence is just showing up to do the work, to just see where things will go. Let's try it and see. And doing the work, whether it's studying the effects of mold on bacteria to invent penicillin, or creating graphic designs that are stunning and inspiring, selling jewelry, or helping people live healthier, happier lives, it's the doing the work where courageous action begins. Because oftentimes, those early steps are ugly, wobbly, wonky, imperfect, and sometimes just plain messy looking to the outside world. Now, Merchant has a slew of posts on her blog about onlyness since she sort of invented the concept, but one post in particular I'm going to include in the bonus section of the download area. It's a parable that she wrote about this mythical school where you can pretty much choose your own course of study and be successful, but some of the potentially best and brightest students get caught up in the doing it right part of taking courageous action. So I want to bust the myth on it. I got to do it right. Okay? The story goes that one day a particularly promising student came to talk to the principal, and he says, I have an idea of what I want to study. And she says, great, go do it. And he's like, well, wait. I need to get some information first. And he proceeds to crank out a laundry list of guarantees he's looking for before he steps foot into the classroom. And what's going to make me the most money, what's going to bring me the most success and the most friends and the most prestige. And she tells him to close his eyes and she puts something in his hand. When he opens his eyes, he sees it's a mirror and he's not happy because he thinks it's a trick. And the principal says, probably the most profoundly wise thing I've heard in a long time. She says, the only person who can tell you what path to take is you. And he's not quite getting it. But what if I fail? What if nobody notices me? How can I be powerful with my place in the world? Where's the answer? And the principal just smiles sadly and says, the only sure way not to find your place in the world is to let someone else choose for you. We let other people choose for us all the time when we prioritize other people's wants and needs ahead of what our heart is calling us into. And as a mother, I know how easy it is to sacrifice and continue to put things away until later because my kids got needs, my husband's got needs, the house got needs, everybody got needs. All God's people's got needs, okay? And you've got needs too. Merchant then goes on to say that finding your authentic voice, charting the way you want to bring your gifts and abilities to full fruit is full of risk. By chasing the trappings of success or mimicking the efforts of others or even saying you can't see it, we each run the risk of wasting precious time that can be better put to use pursuing our passions, occupying our capabilities to grow them more, and tapping our networks to help us fill in our blanks. The only sad thing you need to worry about is trying to be anything else than you. This doesn't have to be about a 6 or 7-figure empire, folks. It can be simple. Start small. In fact, most of the people who dream of 6 and 7 figures never get it because they're too busy dreaming and not busy doing. It says in the Bhagavad Gita that it's better to fail in your own dharma than it is to succeed in someone else's. But I'd go one better and say that as long as you're stepping into your U-shaped hole, you are never failing. Remember I said success is a destination and you are already there. Putting yourself to the task doing what really matters to you is always a success. Even if it doesn't turn out the way you hoped it would or think it should, it is always a success. So we're going to do a quick exercise right now. Take out a sheet of paper. We're going to make a mind map. And if you're not familiar with what these are, I'll talk you through it, so it's not a big deal. In the middle of the page, I want you to write your name and put a circle around it. And then from there, I want you to draw 5 branches radiating out from your name And these are the five key areas of success. So it's faith, family, fitness, fortune, and freedom. Again, faith, family, fitness, fortune, and freedom. What we're doing is we're making a mind map of your onlyness. Now, this will not be comprehensive and exhaustive because we don't have that much time. But under each one of those five key areas, create some more branches that radiate out from each of those subgroups. And in each of those key areas, I want you to write something about you, a group you belong to, something that interests you. Put circles around each of those new connection points. So you've got you at the center, five branches out that say faith, family, fitness, fortune, and freedom, and there's circles around those, and you've got branches out from each of those, and you're going to identify at least one or two things in each of those areas. If you can get more granular with each of those connection points, that's great. Create new branches and start defining connection points. Don't worry about getting everything down. Like I said, we don't have time to do all of that. We're just warming up here. Just write down whatever comes to mind. No stress, no pressure, nothing crazy. For example, in my own mind map, under family, I'm a parent. But I'm a mom of a newly minted adult child, as well as an elementary schooler. I've also been a single mom. So that's another group. Those are three distinct groups under the parenting section of the family section of my mind map. I'm also a wife. I'm not a newlywed anymore, but I was one. So that's two more groups. In fitness, I have a fascination with brain science and how the mind works, if you couldn't tell by what we've already covered in this program. I'm also overweight, so that's a group I resonate with as well. Two areas inside fitness. Again, don't worry about the completeness. Just get started in a few areas. And now what I want you to do is inside a couple, like three of those areas, I want you to make another branch and list at least one other person you know of that fits into that subgroup. For example, I have lots of friends who are also moms. So I could list my friend Pam under the parent subgroup. Any authors that I've read on the subject of brain science could go in that fitness subgroup. Even though I don't know them personally, I know of them. I know they have an affinity for that same thing. Okay, so these don't have to be people that you know personally. They just need to be people that you know of or have a connection to. Identify at least one person in at least three different subgroups. Ideally, not the same person in each of those groups. And chances are very good that there are other people you know that fall into multiple groups. Like my friend Pam, who's a mom, is also a best-selling author. I'm like, okay, that's two different places that she could appear. But I would bet that no one you know falls into all of those circles. And that is you proving your onlyness. Yes, there's probably overlap, because that's how we have friendships. We have friends that we have things in common with. I mean, that's normal. If you do manage to find someone that's fitting into all of these subgroups, I'd encourage you to make your map more diverse. What other curiosities do you have? Or go direct and find what are the differences that you have between you and that person that you share so much in common with. It could be a hometown. It could be a course you took, your socioeconomic background. Be willing to consider even the tiniest of details, like your hair or your eye color, because as we learned with Alexander Fleming, it's often the tiniest things that make the biggest difference. Does anybody want to share one of their onlyness factors? What is one of those things that you found that makes you unique? Star 6 will put you into the queue, and we can talk about what makes you awesomely only in all of the greatest of ways. Y'all are being shy today. All right, that's fine. I'd encourage you to spend more time with this over the course of this course and flesh out more and more of your onlyness. As I said, this is just the tip of the iceberg. These are like the big categories, and then we can get really minutely granular over time. But at the same time, don't obsess over it. Because that can be a great way to practice avoidance from sharing your great work with the world. You're one of only a handful of people who are taking this course, for example. So that means you'll have a different perspective on marketing yourself and how you perceive your great work than others do who didn't take this course. But that doesn't mean you need to list every course you've ever taken or every book you've ever read to clarify your onlyness. By the time you've finished even the exercise that we've done just now, you should have some points of differentiation, some ways of seeing how you are the only you in your world who possesses the unique set of interests, characteristics, traits, hopes, visions for the future, ideas, backgrounds, upbringings, etc., to make you you. That is onlyness. Again, don't obsess. Just map out what comes to mind with ease, because those are the things your subconscious mind wants you to remember right now. Those are the things your subconscious mind thinks are important. Let me give you just a couple more minutes to kind of finish that up for right now so you've got something to walk out of class with, so to speak. And no, there won't be a worksheet for this because it's really powerful for you to be doing this by hand. So if you've been sitting there going, oh, I'll just wait for the homework worksheet on Monday. Nope, not coming. This is one you got to do yourself. There's power in drawing those connections and feeling your physical body actually map those connections. All right, so that's onlyness. Let's shift gears and talk marketing, which is funny because shifting gears is the problem that we're going to discuss in a manner of speaking. There's a danger in doing what you love and making a business out of it that many out-of-the-box entrepreneurs face. And Les McKeown, the author of the book Predictable Success, who is a former client and a good friend of mine, he describes it as the artisan trap. This is a time when the entrepreneur focuses almost exclusively on bringing in sales and then switches over to fulfilling the orders, which causes the sales to stall because you're not out there selling. The artisan trap is essentially a vicious circle of sales and service, sales and service, sales and service, without making any headway to sustainability. So you're flip-flopping back and forth between creating and then selling the thing you created and then going back and creating again. Or if you're a direct seller, you're spending time doing parties and then marketing the parties and then doing the parties instead of finding a way to make everything part of the marketing system for your business. Now, there is nothing wrong with this cycle, and some people can make it sustainable. Lifestyle entrepreneurs do this all the time. They launch a product into the world. They live off the residuals for months before launching their next thing. And in between, they're vacationing or coming up with their next big thing, but they're not selling anything. Marie Forleo is a great example of this right now. She offers a program called B-School once every year. And then the rest of the year, she's doing other things in a location-independent business that she's built over the past 10-plus years. Marie has also built a marketing system and team to keep things running while she's living her life, which is the key to turning the artisan trap into a true lifestyle business. Many creative entrepreneurs tell me that they don't like sales or that doing marketing turns them off. They just prefer to do what they love and not worry about the selling part, the finding of the customers, the marketing, the whatever, and I get it. I do. You may recall the line if you saw the movie Glengarry Glen Ross, ABC, always be closing. As for most heart-centered entrepreneurs, heart-centered creatives, out-of-the-box thinkers, that feels manipulative, slimy, and not at all in integrity with the way you want to show up in the world. Yet, without a clear marketing and sales strategy in place, it's hard to consistently reach your right customers. If you're still working another job, you have even less time to devote to creative or sales effort. So you end up throwing spaghetti on the wall to see what's going to stick until the orders start coming in. And you're like, whew, gosh, I got orders. And then with the orders in your hand, you stop worrying about the selling thing and focus on delivery or living your life until something else draws your attention, like when the day job calls again or the money starts running out. Okay? And that's the vicious cycle that we're talking about. Plus, the idea of closing means the conversation has ended. It's over. There's nothing more to do. But I'm sure you'd like to do business with your clients more than once, yes? So let's end the cycle of madness. Heart-centered marketing isn't icky, slimy, or inauthentic. Done well, marketing is a conversation with your right audience to help them understand how you can better serve them and to help them say yes to your offers more easily if it's a good fit. Do you see how that's a two-way street? It's a conversation. You're doing something for them, i.e. helping them understand how you can serve them, and then they're doing something for you. They're saying yes to your offer if it's a good fit. Or they're saying no to your offer if it's not a good fit. So there's no waffly middle ground, I'll get back to you and follow up that's crazy and you never hear back from them drama. There's none of that. So let's create a variation on the ABC, always be closing theme, a variation that most healthy businesses take to heart. Let's say ABC is always be connecting. If heart-centered marketing is about conversations, that means you've got to connect with people to have those conversations. Oh, and that mind map you just started? Gotcha. Those are the connections you already have in the world. Now, granted, some of them are going to be stronger than others, but this is a great place to start building stronger connection. What if you looked at your daily tasks in a new way? What if anything that connected with a potential client was considered marketing? Okay, right now, notice what's happening to the energy in your body. Does that idea freak you out a little or inspire you? Be ruthlessly honest with yourself about this idea of seeing everything as a form of marketing. Don't judge it. Just recognize where you're at. Is it like, oh, that would be awesome. That feels light and easy. Or, oh, my God, I don't think I can do that. Or is it somewhere in between? Surveys suggest that you should invest anywhere from 1 to 4 hours each business day doing marketing-related activities. Now, I hope you're listening because I said should. So you need to measure that against what works for you. But before you summarily dismiss the idea of spending 1 to 4 hours each day or investing 1 to 4 hours each business day in marketing-related activities, let's apply the everything is marketing theory to see if it's even possible. Okay, I actually block out entire days each week as marketing days to focus on marketing-related activities. 4 hours every day can sound daunting if you think in the traditional always be closing sales model. Instead, let's apply this new model of always be connecting and see if it will work. And while it's true that some of my daily activities are traditional marketing activities, like writing sales page copy or scheduling social media posts, there are other activities too, like writing new content for my website, recording new songs and training segments for my videos, writing and sending my weekly newsletter, connecting with clients and contacts in person, via email, or on social media, my coaching calls, my mastermind group meetings, helping out in a few of the Facebook groups that I'm in. Anything that gives me the opportunity to connect with potential clients, for me, counts as marketing. Now, this doesn't feel heavy, slimy, or icky to me. This list feels like an authentic way for me to reach my right audience based on who I am and how I like to show up in the world. It's my way of sharing my great work with the world in ways that work for me. And yes, my list may not work for you. That's excellent. The key here is to find what feels light for you. I don't like calling people, so using the phone is not a big part of my marketing strategy unless I have people calling me, which is light and easy for me. You can call me all day long, and I'm good, but if I got to pick up the phone and call somebody else, go for what feels light and expansive for you. Maybe even easy, but don't let easy be your sole guiding principle, because learning new things isn't always easy. Walking is much more efficient and easier on the body than crawling, but most of us learn how to crawl first. And if we gave up because crawling was hard, we would never walk, okay? So don't fall into the it's got to be easy trap. Sometimes courageous action means doing something difficult for a time so that it can become easier or lighter. And yes, I got on the phone quite a bit when I was younger, and that's when I got clarity that that's not working for me. I'm good at it, and I don't like it. I don't wish to do it, so I'm not going to. You've got to find what works for you. Now, if you believe in your message and your great work, there are people in the world that need to know about it. Unlike the field of dreams, you can't just build something and expect people to come. Products don't sell themselves. I've never seen a box of Tide jump off the shelf into my shopping cart at the grocery store, proceed to take the credit card out of my wallet, run it through the cash register scan bar, hand it to the cashier, and put it back in my wallet, jump back in the cart, and drive itself back to my car. I've never seen that happen. Heck, even in Field of Dreams, only one person came to the field. He spent all this time building this ball diamond, and Shoeless Joe, the ghost from beyond the corn, comes to see the field. That's it. Shoeless Joe is the one that told the other players to come check out the ball diamond, and then, you know, all of the ghostly Chicago White Sox come out and, hey, they're going to play ball in Rays Field. Word of mouth marketing. But if you're not talking about your own Field of Dreams, who will? We do not all get so lucky as to have a Shoeless Joe Jackson come to our thing and go, wow, this is awesome, let me go tell the world. Heart-centered marketing doesn't have to be a chore or a big to-do, but you do need to make time for it on a regular basis. And it can be in simple things you're already doing in your daily workload to connect with your right audience. Otherwise, you're going to be stuck in the artisan trap for life, which is no way to run a profitable, sustainable business. But what do you say? How do you tell people about your great work? This is usually where people go, give me a script. Tell me what I have to say. And I'm not giving you that easy way out, because it's really not the easy way out. It's actually harder to take somebody else's words and make them your own than it is to just share your story. So hopefully you were able to do the difficulty versus originality axis homework assignment. If you haven't done it already, we're going to take a minute to do it right now. We'll do it again later in the program, but I want you to do it now because I want you to have a baseline to help you track your progress. There are no wrong answers in this document as long as you're being honest. You're basically plotting how you perceive yourself and your great work in the marketplace. So on a scale of 1 to 9, how difficult do you feel it is to share your great work with the world right now? That means finding those people and serving those people. How difficult is it for you to share your great work? 1 is, it's really easy. And 9 is, are you kidding? It is like the hardest thing in the known universe. So on a scale of 1 to 9, and don't overthink it, just whatever number comes up, roll with it. And then you're going to plot the originality of your great work, too. How original is this? Now, if you're a direct seller, it's probably not a 9 on the originality scale, unless you're doing it in a very out-of-the-box way, like the guy who made millions hosting Tupperware parties dressed in drag. Okay? He was pretty original. Tupperware, not so original. His offer, his version, very original. So remember that your onlyness plays a part in your originality, which means it's highly unlikely that any of you are going to have a 1 on the originality scale. Oh, my God, there's nothing original about this at all. Again, no judgment. Drop the judgment. Just your best assessment of where you think you are right now today. So a very familiar offering with a very easy-to-reach audience would be a 1-1. While a very original offering with a very difficult-to-reach audience would be a 9-9. Like, you have a completely new concept for a completely new form of entertainment, and it's got a high barrier to entry. It's a 9-9, okay? And now, if you have your chart in front of you, you're going to see 2 shaded areas and 2 lighter areas on that chart. I want to explain those after you've plotted your point. The lighter areas are where you'll have to apply the most effort to be profitable and sustainable. And I'll talk about the types of effort in a later lesson. But, for example, in a market where everyone is familiar with your work, your type of work, and it's easy to reach your right audience, there's lots of competition. This is where you become a commodity. Anywhere from 1-1 to 5-5 is pretty much a commodity. Okay, lots of competition. Everyone in modern America is familiar with toilet paper. Walk down the aisle of your local grocery store. You'll find lots of different kinds, lots of different brands, 2-ply, extra thick. It's all over the place. And it's considered a commodity because everyone knows what it is. Everyone knows how it works. It's not particularly original. And you can reach your audience easily by getting your product in any grocery store. There, everybody needs toilet paper. On the other end of the spectrum are the offerings that are very original and very difficult to reach the right audience. Nobody's ever heard of the thing that you're offering. That means there's little to no trust in the marketplace because it's untested, it's untried. So you have to leverage the know, like, and trust factor in other ways, which we'll talk about when we dig deeper into smart, authentic selling next week, because that's the different quadrants on that chart tell you, oh, if I'm in this zone, I need more of that, okay? There's a lot of effort needed in those white areas to make profitable, sustainable living with your great work. Now, not saying it's impossible. You can break through in both of these high-effort areas. Starbucks is a great example. They took a $1 commodity and turned it into a $5 experience. And now there's all kinds of people trying to create their own little Starbucks experience, trying to turn what Starbucks does into a commodity again. Again, because it's not very original. Coffee is not original. But they found a new way of reaching people that made it original. They created an experience that made it more original. But even now, that's not as original as it once was. So can you be profitable and sustainable? Yes. But you need to be willing to put in major effort over the long haul, which for most entrepreneurs is too much work for too little return when you've got a life you want to enjoy. So I want you to have clarity on this, okay? But the shaded regions on the chart, that's where you've got some great opportunity. For example, if you've got an offering that's very original and it's easy to reach the right people, you've found a niche in the market that needs you and can be profitable quickly. Nobody's ever heard of the automobile, okay? This is a place that most people aspire to, something that everybody can understand, something that's easy to find, you know, for your customers, it's easy to find them. By the time Edison had perfected the light bulb, remember, he failed 1,000 times, so people already knew about the light bulb. But by the time he had it perfected, lots of people knew about it, and he had customers lining up to get in on his invention. And we'll talk more about Edison later in the program, but he understood the value of advanced marketing. Steve Jobs, however, took the opposite track. He didn't advertise. He didn't blatantly promote what he was working on. He did everything in secret. But the iPod was not at all original. MP3 players and flash drive type devices had been around for a while, external hard drives. But finding the right audience was tricky. Techno geeks understood it. But the rest of the world wasn't ready to embrace this tech commodity. It was basically a hard drive. And that's all an iPod is a hard drive. It happens to have a speaker so you can listen to the files and play it back. But it's a glorified hard drive. okay? So people in the tech world understood it, and hard drives were a dime a dozen. In fact, it was Richard Branson who, as an April Fool's joke, said, one day we're going to create, we're working on a box that you can store all of, you can download your music off the internet, and you can play it, and everybody's like, oh my gosh, and he was like, April Fool's, and it was a few years later that MP3 players were actually being manufactured, and it was a few years after that that Steve Jobs made it pretty and created the 1,000 songs in your pocket marketing message. So it wasn't original. Finding the market was difficult until it wasn't anymore, because Steve found the right marketing message to elevate a commodity to a sought-after status symbol with a price to match. So wherever you think you are on the axis right now, you're right. Don't worry about it. It's okay. Today, the iPod is not original, nor is it difficult to reach the right audience. So it's a white zone offering, probably a 4-1 or maybe a 5-1 since Apple, and yet it's very profitable for Apple for reasons we won't get into today. Everything from airplanes and rocket ships to shoelaces starts as a 9-9. Very original, no one's ever heard of it, and you don't know how to get it to market. And everything eventually becomes a 1-1. Everybody's heard about it. It's no big deal. It's what you do along the way that determines how profitable and how sustainable it will be, which is where we begin our segue into smart, authentic sales and my donut story. Smart, authentic selling isn't about pushing anyone or being slimy. Authentic selling is part of heart-centered marketing. It's the part of the conversation where you share your story about your offering with the people who most need or want what you have to offer. And you don't always have to tell the story. Sometimes you can show it. A couple hours from where I live is a place called Cops and Donuts. When the Clare City Bakery was about to go belly up, a local group of cops bought it and transformed this little tiny bakery into a mouthpiece for the community. The entire shop has a law enforcement theme. The staff dresses like convicts. They have inmate numbers on their on the backs of their uniforms. The bathrooms have these posters hanging on them so they look like jail cell doors. The cops wear uniforms, and you can even have your mug shot taken in the gift shop area. They've been written up in national publications. They have people that come from all over the world to visit their little bakery and try one or more of their tasty pastries. It's quite an experience. They've even got a cafe that they've added on. You know, sit there and eat. And when you walk in, there's this huge display case with all kinds of interesting treats, including a cream-filled maple bar that's topped with bacon. I've not ever had it, but I took a picture of it. The cops interact with you. They ask you questions. They make you feel welcome. They tell you about their favorite donuts, different donuts, and help you decide which flavor is right for you, all the while telling their story about how they got the place and, you know, what, how it's that they take videos and post them on social media. It's so much fun, and you never feel pressured to buy anything. They don't need to pressure you because they're too busy helping the crowds of people in line ahead of you. It's just helpful, engaging conversation about buying and selling coffee and donuts at the Clare City Bakery. But what would happen if the cops put a curtain in front of their display case? How would you know what they've got to offer? Yeah, the sign says donuts, but most people want to know what options they have before they buy. I don't know many folks who walk in and say, oh, give me a dozen donuts and surprise me. Some people do, but not many. You built your business on surprise me's, you wouldn't be in business. Smart, authentic selling removes the curtain from your display case, and it informs your potential buyer about what you offer and how it can help or delight them. The bakery went belly up in the first place because it was a commodity. You can buy donuts everywhere, even really yummy ones. But Cops and Donuts elevated the bakery from a commodity to an experience. And it's not always about solving a pain, although I suppose if you're really craving bacon, you might make a case for that maple bar. As a musician, for example, my music can inspire people and create delight. Some of my most viewed YouTube videos are in musical mashups, fun, funny parodies of popular music. It's not solving a pain, but it's definitely serving a delight. And a lot of times we get hung up, particularly if we're in the creative field, how does this solve a pain? Maybe it doesn't. It doesn't have to. If people are enjoying it, if people are getting happiness out of it, that works. It's up to you to tell people how you serve them. Whether you're solving a pain or bringing them joy, be honest, authentic, and real with them by sharing the stories of your products and your company. After all, that's part of your onlyness. No one else can share your stories your way. The best way, in my experience, to build a profitable, sustainable business doing what you love is to be yourself. Use your words, tell your stories, and share your vision for what you're creating. When you do it and keep doing it via heart-centered marketing, the right people will come. So if you guys have any questions about anything that we've talked about, now's the time to hop into the queue on that. Star 6 will put you in the queue to ask any questions about heart-centered marketing, word choices, things like that. And I just want to say that there are a lot of people who could talk about the Clare City Bakery, and there are a lot of people who can't because they've never experienced it. That's part of my onlyness. I've been there. I've had my mugshot taken. I can tell that story, and I can use it to educate you. You have stories like that, too. There's value in those unique little bits of you that you get to bring to your marketing, to your sales, and it just makes you that much cooler. Any questions, you guys? Star 6 going once. Going twice. Well, I guess you guys are just sponges, just taking it all in. All right, so I will close the Q&A. And I will dole out homework. On Monday, you'll find new worksheets in the download area. One of this week's assignments is to start processing some of those beliefs you're clinging to. What's holding you where you're at? What's the sense of truth you're resisting? How is that impacting your current situation and bringing your great work to more of your right people? One of the questions I like to ask people when they're telling me, you know, I believe blah, da, 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 or it's always been this way. What if that wasn't true? What if the opposite were true? And then, you know, heads kind of tilt to one side and go, oh, you know, I never thought about it that way. Well, it's because you've been clinging to a belief. You've got a particular worldview based on your onlyness that says things go this way. And so you need to think about that. I also want you to start looking for ways to make marketing activities part of your regular routine. Who can you introduce to your great work? Who can you ask for help in spreading the word? Do you have someone you need to follow up with? An email to send? Can you engage your fans by sharing a sneak peek of what you're working on? What one thing can you do today to always be connecting in a heart-centered way? You'll have a worksheet, but I think you can get started on that right now today if you're feeling up to it. And remember those lists of non-negotiables that you made. Make sure your marketing-related activities are in alignment and in integrity with your non-negotiables. And then lastly, you'll be thinking about your stories. What made you decide to start doing this thing that you love so much? How does it help or delight people? What kind of people does it help or delight? What stories do you have from your current customers that put your company or your offering in a positive light? You're going to have a worksheet to help you identify what words you would use to tell those stories. Write them down, and if you're feeling confident, start practicing them. Start practicing using them, because these are the stories that are the threads that become the beautiful tapestry of you and your business. Stories sell, and we're going to talk about sales a lot more next week. The better you get at telling your stories, the more of your right people you'll attract. Oh, remember, we're off for next week for Easter, so it's not next week, it's the next lesson. I'll just say it that way. So be sure to schedule your coaching sessions if you haven't already. And I'll see you again on the 11th when we are back from Nashville. And until then, This is Lisa Robin Young signing off. And blessings and peace, everybody. Have a great day.